with David Petrucha. His new book is Roosevelt Sweeps Nation, FDR's 1936 Landslide, and the Triumph of the Liberal Ideal. The Communist Party of the United States of America, the Socialist Party, they have figures that lead them. And they're important figures because of their connection to previous successes. The Socialists had been successful since all that century, since the earliest vote, 1912, I believe. David, help me. Was 1912 their top or was 1920 their top? I can't recall. But
1920 is when they top about 900,000. Well, it depends how you measure it.
Yeah.
1920, they get the highest number of raw votes. 1912, they get the highest percentage. And even as late as 1932, Norman Thomas, who was their perennial candidate at this point, following their previous perennial candidate, Eugene V. Debs, is still drawing 845,000 votes and drawing hundreds of thousands of votes in a recent New York City mayoral election.
So the socialists represent theory and book learning and classicism, but they also appeal to what we would say is the proto-union faction in the large city of New York. Roosevelt regards them as a challenge because they can pick off pieces of New York State, pieces of the electorate in New York City in particular, and might cost him those electoral votes. The Communist Party of the USA is harder to imagine being a threat today, but at the time, it was led by a man named Earl Browder. And importantly, David, you've come up with a fact as to why Browder was still the head of the party. He was Stalin's choice. Why?
Two reasons, actually. One, he wasn't Jewish. Stalin did not want a Jew representing the American Communist Party USA. And he was pliant. You didn't want some guy who was going to give you any trouble. And Browder, who was sort of colorless and known as the bookkeeper, because he had been a bookkeeper, was a guy that Stalin could push around. Although Browder pushes back a little because Stalin, who had originally been, the Communist Party USA, at the beginning of the New Deal, was like, this is some sort of fascist warmongering thing. Franklin Roosevelt is the tool of Wall Street, blah, 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 blah. And then when Stalin and the Comintern switch gears to the popular front worldwide to combat Hitler, all of a sudden they say, maybe we should be supporting this Franklin Roosevelt, this guy. He could come in useful. Let's endorse him. And Browder says, no. We would be the kiss of death to Franklin Roosevelt in the United States of America. So let's run somebody for president still and pretend we're running against him, but we will fire all our opposition and firepower against Roosevelt's opponent, whoever that will turn out to be.
So the communists are also a concern because they can pick off a splinter of the vote. This is a concern to Roosevelt as he's thinking about the campaign.
And again, in New York City and California.
And those two elements are sizable in his campaigning. How does he think the communists endorse him? I think at one point they say the communism stands right there with the red, white and blue.
Not 20th century Americanism.
And endorse Roosevelt. But this is the tricky part. They do not speak for Roosevelt. They speak as if they're campaigning on their own, but they want Roosevelt elected. Why is that, David?
Well, because they do what it's this popular front, and they are creating all these front groups at this point and getting a lot of just plain folks, middle class people, intellectuals to back them. They are, concerned about having Franklin Roosevelt in their corner when push comes to shove against Adolf Hitler. They misjudged Hitler. They thought that with him coming to power, this would just accelerate the revolution in Germany. Well, hello, that never happened. And then in 1936, what happens is really the precursor to the Second World War with civil war in Spain. So things are heating up internationally, and they want to keep Franklin Roosevelt in their corner and in power.
At the same time, the Communist Party of the USA is linked to, and we can mention, the Farmers Workers Party. Do I have that right? Of Minnesota. This is Olson.
Farmer Labor, I think.
Labor Party, which is a violent organization.
This is a crazy guy that no one remembers. Somebody was asking me, did Huey Long ever have anyone killed? And it's like, I don't think so. But Floyd Olson, the governor of radical, a governor of Minnesota, who, like Long, wants to be president in 1940, but is playing footsie with FDR. His allies, there are two newspaper people who are rubbed out in gangland style, like right after one another, bang, bang, literally bang, bang. So these are wild times. And this also speaks to the radical agrarianism of the upper Midwest, where you have Olson in Minnesota, La Follette in Wisconsin, the La Follettes in Minnesota, Lemke in North Dakota, George Norris in Nebraska. It's a different time and a different political geography.
And Errol Browder does not push them away. He is united front with a man who has his newspaper critics murdered, or the presumption is they're murdered. Now, these are all the characters that FDR is thinking about as he prepares for the campaign. And when we come back, a gigantic figure, William Randolph Hearst in the campaign of 36. David Petrosia, the author of Roosevelt Sweeps Nation. I'm John Battle.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.